Rebroadcast for the American Armed Forces and their allies, the master metalist, Dunninger.
Good evening, everyone. Glad to see you here. I want Glenn to introduce our judges. Not only are they familiar, but the ladies are lovely and the gentlemen lucky. He has one at each elbow. Glenn.
Right. First, the very popular star of two decades of fame in stage, screen, and radio, Miss Irene Rich. And the young Titian beauty who has proved there's dramatic talent on the distaff side of the Cagney family, Miss Jean Cagney. Our third judge, the man responsible for painting the fingertips and lips of America, the New Hampshire boy, now president of Revlon, Mr. Charles Revson. Dunninger?
Thanks, Glenn. Well, friends, that's who they are, and now that you know them all, how about tuning your thoughts to me and turning over your ideas to other things? Concentrate on anything you want to and as hard as you can. I receive an impression from someone that is concentrating his or her mind upon a question. The question regards Frank. It's associated with a date. The lady or gentleman is asking me this question. When did Frank leave? Where does it come from, please? The lady in the second row. We never met before. Is that quite correct,
yes,
Mary? We never met before. I believe you are concentrating upon son's name?
No.
It's not your son?
Not my son.
Not your son. Well, did Frank leave in the month of April?
He did.
Did he leave upon the third day of April?
Yes.
Did he leave in the year 1942?
Yes, sir.
He did. I thank you very much indeed. 1942. Who among you is concentrating his or her mind upon the numbers or digits 341? Where does that come from, please? 341. That comes from the lady about the 35th row in the center of the auditorium. The young man is rushing up to the young man or the young lady with a microphone on a large cord. Is that your thought, young lady?
Yes, it is.
Is that an address?
Yes, it is.
Is that Calhoun Street?
That's right.
Calhoun Street.
Calhoun.
Calhoun. I said that the first time. Calhoun Street. Are you thinking of Ohio?
Yes.
Is that in Clifton, Ohio?
Cincinnati. Clifton is a suburb of Cincinnati.
Were you thinking of Clifton?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You see, I can only give you what you're thinking about. Are you likewise thinking of a telephone number?
Yes.
Are those digits 5175?
That's right.
I thank you very much. 5175. Someone among you was thinking of a name beginning with a letter... No. It isn't... Yes, I get Kathy, C-A-P-P-Y. Where does that come from, please? That comes from the gentleman about the 40th row, 42nd, I would say, the center of the studio. Is that your thought, sir?
That is right.
I thank you very much. And someone now is thinking of Concord, North Carolina. Oh, that's your thought as well.
Who?
The same gentleman. You had two thoughts and didn't know which one of the two to send to me. Is that correct?
That's right.
Thank you. Who now is asking me, where, wait a minute, did my husband actually lose his shirt in a card game? Where did it come from? The lady in the very last row, just raise your hand, madam. Well, if he was in the same card game that I attended, we both lost our shirt there, I'm afraid. Someone is concentrating his or her mind upon a sentence with reference to what seems to be a number. I get Union 3. Where does it come from, please? Union 3. That's on the left side of the studio, about the 20th row. Is that yours, young lady? Is that your thought?
That's correct.
Is that a phone number?
That is correct.
Is that Union 3-6000?
That is correct.
I thank you. Union 3-6000. Who among you is concentrating their mind upon Hudson Street?
Hudson Street. Where does it come from? It comes from someone. That comes from the jot in the center of the studio. About the eighth row. That is your forcer. It's difficult to get to you with the microphone. That was what you were thinking about?
Yes, sir.
We never met before, of course.
No.
Now, who was thinking of the name Mary David? Where does that come from? Mary David. You're up and about the 10th row, left side of the studio. Is that your thought, sir?
Mary and David?
Mary David.
Yes.
This number you have in mind, what type of number is that, sir?
Auto car.
Auto car number. Does anyone here know it other than you?
One more.
One more. Your wife?
No.
Well, your son. I couldn't see so far down.
Yes.
The only two that know it. Is that a motor car number, or rather the letter combination MK and the number 26?
That's right.
I thank you. Another impression which I received comes from someone concentrating his or her mind upon a birthday. A day in the month of July, the 25th day in July. Where does that come from, please? July 25th. Who is thinking of July 25th? The gentleman about the 20th row on the right side of the auditorium. The young man with the mic is going up to him. He has to climb a number of steps to get to him on a long cabled microphone. Is that your thought, sir?
Yes, but not a birthday.
Your own? You're born in 1888?
It's not a birthday.
Not a birthday. Were you concentrating upon 1888?
No year concentrating.
The gentleman here is doing the thinking. Sixth row, center of the auditorium. You see, I can't pick the individual that does the thinking. Would that be correct, sir? The 6th day of June, or rather the 25th day of June, 1888?
Correct.
Just by form of variation, since I've selected you for this test and had a bit of difficulty locating you, would you take some other number in mind as well? Are you now thinking of a serial number, perchance? Is it your own number? Yes or no?
My own.
Good. I'll see if I can get that as well. Would that be 10539?
Correct.
That is correct. Thank you very much. Who is saying, see if I'm getting this correctly, who among you is asking me a question with reference to a sentence? Will we come here again to see your show? Where does that come from? That comes from the young man about the 23rd, 24th row, center of the studio. Is that your thought, sir?
That is, sir.
Well, I sincerely hope so. You're always welcome. But
thank you.
Isn't it true that prior to asking me that question, you were concentrating upon a series of numbers, a digit?
That's right.
Weren't you thinking of 307?
That's right.
875?
That's right.
And likewise, 8, or rather 786?
That's right.
I thank you. I get an impression from someone that is thinking of the name of a camp. A name of a camp beginning with the letter M. Camp M-A-H-K-E-E?
That's correct.
That's the young lady about the 9th row, left side of the studio. K-E-E-M-A-C?
N-A-C, that's correct.
N-A-C, rather. I thank you very much indeed. And now, who is thinking of a name? The name is June, I believe, and the number's 248. That comes the lady in the second row, left side of the studio. Is that your thought, young lady? Is that correct?
That's correct.
You made this notation upon your own stationery, is that correct?
Yes, that's right.
But you asked me the question, only the question, and only wrote the question, what is my thought? And that
yes,
is accurate.
Yes.
That is right. And that information, as I called a moment ago, is West that's Beach Street, is that correct? Or
what,
rather
what
West
is the
Street.
Number? What is the number?
248.
Oh, yes.
That's
West
right.
Beach. That's right.
Is that West
correct.
Beach?
Yes.
West Beach is correct. And are you likewise thinking of Farley Building?
That's correct. Farley
now,
Building.
Am I correct in stating that at home you had been concentrating upon a thought vastly different to the one that you used here tonight and had something to do with the word or name Mobile or Moly?
That's correct.
You thought
Mobile.
Of that at home?
Yes. But
the other thought is the one you projected at this time.
That's correct.
And at home you had another thought in mind.
That's
and the
right.
other thought was Helena. Or Helene?
Well,
how close am I to that?
Pretty close.
What is the name?
Helene.
Well, I think we'll settle for that. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Are you a friend of the Reverend Father, perchance, to your right? Oh, you'd like to be the lady. The lady says no, but she likes to be. I was just wondering because I've been trying very, very hard to get his impression. Well, who among you is thinking of Don, D-O-N, still? The lady just remarked she never saw anything like that in her life. Was that your thought? Right again, yes. Don Still, that comes from way down the studio. Is that your thought, sir?
Yes, sir.
This series of numbers that you have in mind, and letters, rather unique. A double A, is that correct?
Not quite.
No. No two A's? How about four A's?
Correct.
And a license plate number?
Yes, sir.
California license plate number.
That's correct.
4715.
Correct.
Aye, thank you. And who is concentrating his or her mind upon the initials MDW? Milton is the first name. That comes from a young lady about, 50 rows down the studio. The young man is off the top of the mic. Is that your thought, young lady?
That's right.
We never met before.
No,
by the way, this young gentleman is from North Carolina, is he not?
That's correct.
Right again. Thank you very much. I receive an impression of someone thinking of New Rochelle, or New Rochelle 2. That must, of course, that comes from the Reverend Father in the second row. Well, that is your thought, sir?
Correct.
Is that your own phone number, perchance?
No.
Is it the phone number of someone that
that's
you're
right.
concentrating
someone
upon?
That is listening in.
Oh, someone that's listening in to
that's
the...
That's correct.
You've been trying to get this number over to me, sir. I do concentrate very, very definitely, sir. Would that number be New Rochelle 29296?
Correct.
I thank you.
Applause.
You object to the applause, Mr. Revson?
Not at all. Dunninger deserves it. Anyway, the more women applaud, the more conscious they are of their fingers, and the more Revlon they'll buy.
Oh, boy. You sure ran that plug in. No wonder you're a success. All of us, at one time or another, have had premonitions that grow strangely out of our subconscious thoughts. One of the most dramatic incidents of this nature happened to one of America's greatest presidents. We are asking Brett Morrison to tell you the story.
On the 14th of April in 1865, President Abraham Lincoln called a meeting of his cabinet. Worried and anxious about the state of the nation, Lincoln looked like a very tired man. Seating himself atop one of the tables in the council chamber, he buried his face between his hands and awaited the arrival of his staff. When the gentlemen finally assembled, the president rose and addressed them in a grave and anxious tone. "Gentlemen," said Lincoln, "before long you will have important news." "What, sir, have you had bad news? Is it anything serious?" inquired one of the group. Lincoln replied, "I have heard nothing. I have had no news. But you will hear tomorrow." The president was too disturbed to continue discussion of business on hand. A feeling of deep anxiety spread through the council chamber. Finally, Mr. Stanton implored the president to explain why he expected bad news. Said Lincoln, "I've had a dream. I've dreamed that dream three times. Once before the Battle of Bull Run, again before the Battle of Gettysburg, and last night, I had that same singular dream. The events and results that follow this dream are always important. It is always the same. I'm in a boat alone on a boundless ocean. I have no oars, no rudder. I am helpless. I drift, drift, drift." The men looked at the president as he spoke. His lean face was lined. He looked worried, tired, and worn. Strange that a man like Lincoln should believe in such omens. Strange indeed. 5 hours later, as he sat in his box at Ford's Theater, President Abraham Lincoln was assassinated.
Thank
Thank you, Brett Morrison, for that unexplainable instance of the workings of the subconscious mind. Week after week, Dunninger has explored the realm of the conscious and subconscious and has startled vast audiences by this uncanny faculty. Now tonight, we have another instance of Dunninger's unusual abilities. Bob Dunn, author of the new book, One Day in the Army, has suggested a radio adaptation of Dunninger's mental lie detector. You've all heard of the mechanical gadgets used by police and psychologists. But Dunninger's device is different. He uses no equipment, only his mind. When this great technique was still unperfected, Dunninger was able to use it in helping solve many major criminal cases throughout the nation. Tonight, you will witness its first demonstration on the air. As the audience entered the studio, three of them were selected at random by our judges. Remember, Dunninger had nothing to do with their choice. Will the three people chosen by Miss Rich, Miss Cagney, and Mr. Revson please come up on stage now? If you'll come up on stage, thank you, and here they come. Dunninger's job is to ferret out their secrets. Well, there, indeed, is a job for you, Dunninger.
Well, Glenn, it's an unusual task, an unusual test. Well, I'll do my very, very best, to do the unusual. These three persons, two gentlemen in uniform, and a lady, have been chosen by my three judges. They've been chosen from approximately, 450 to 500 persons who walk into the studio tonight to witness this demonstration. Am I accurate in stating that you are positive strangers to me, that I have never seen any of you or any one of you before in my life? Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct.
That is entirely correct.
That is correct.
I'd like a word from each and every one
of
the three judges. You were simply chosen, taken by the arm, and asked whether you'd participate in this very unique and unusual test. Is it not?
That's right.
All right.
That's right.
Correct.
Now, the idea is simply this. In your conscious mind is a fixed impression. That is, if you are concentrating upon a definite factor, you cannot possibly eliminate that thought, regardless of how hard you may try to do so. In other words, if you will try to sort of deceive me, let us use that word for experimental purposes only, by concentrating upon a false name to a direct question, I will attempt to locate the false name and analyze the correct thought in back of it. In other words, the conscious mind will be trying to deceive me. The subconscious mind cannot. And I'm about to prove that. Now, will you be good enough, all three of you, to make up your minds upon the one subject upon which you wish to test my ability as a mentalist? That's the idea. Miss Cagney was trying to read my thoughts there for a moment and became upsetting that. There is one among the three of you, and mind you, I can never find the individual that's doing the thinking directly, that is concentrating his or perhaps her mind upon mother's name. Would the person among the three of you doing this please raise his hand, or her hand, as the case may be? Who is thinking of mother's name? Which of the three of you, please, was concentrating upon mother's birthday? That's it, mother's birthday. That comes from the young man on the extreme right. That is your sir. Would you acknowledge that, please?
That is correct.
Yes. Now, concentrate kindly. Are you thinking that your mother was born in the month of July? That is correct? No, that is false. Your mother was not born in the month of July. But July was your conscious impression. Your subconscious mind tells me that your mother was born in the month of June. Is that correct? Yes. Your false impression is that your mother was born upon the fourth day of July in the year 1885. Is that right? Yes, that's wrong. In other words, that is the thought that you were sending me. But you have oftentimes concentrated upon your mother's birthday, and you know that your mother was born upon the 30th day of June in the year 1890. That's 100% correct. I thank you very much indeed. Now, the lady that has been chosen for the test, you are concentrating upon a name, supposedly your own. Is that right?
That is right.
Yes. The name that you are concentrating upon, which you're trying to send me as your name, is Ruth.
Correct.
Yes, that is incorrect. Your name, of course, isn't Ruth. Ruth happens to be the name of a friend of yours that you've chosen to sort of subterfuge the thought, isn't that so?
That's true.
Yes, that's a friend's name. Your right name is Jean.
Right.
Yes, Jean. Now, you are trying to tell me consciously that your mind is sending me the vibration of Olson.
Right.
That's right. That, of
Correct.
Course, is wrong. Olson isn't your name. That is the friend's name of whom we spoke of a moment or two ago. Your correct name is Anhold.
Correct.
I thank you very much indeed. Anhold, me. And now we come to the third and last subject of the trio that have been chosen for this unique test. He's a very stern-looking young man with a lot of personality, a lot of perseverance, and a lot of, well, if I may, with your permission, use the word domination. This young man has the power to rule and is a difficult subject for this type of test. You've been told that by your many friends, haven't you?
In a few occasions, I have.
A few occasions, you have. My dear friend, I'm not trying to analyze your character. I'm not a character analyst. But I do get an impression that you are concentrating your thoughts upon your birthplace.
That is correct.
Yes. And you're telling me that you were born in New Jersey.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. That's what you're telling me.
That's what I'm telling you.
But you weren't born in New Jersey. You were born close at hand, however, in Pennsylvania. Isn't that right?
That's right.
Yes, that's right. You were trying to convey the idea to me that you were born in a place called Trenton.
That's right.
That's an island between New York and Philadelphia. Correct? But you do not come from this unique little island where so many nice people do come from. You came from a place called Newcastle in Pennsylvania. Is that right?
That's right. I don't know how you get
That's
there.
Right. I thank you very much indeed.
The Cagney family is notorious for honest, straightforward answers. How do you judge what you've witnessed, Miss Cagney?
Well, no book learning or magic I've ever seen can explain Dunninger. I think he's great.
Thank you, Miss Cagney. I'm glad you approve. What about you, Miss Ridge?
Oh, it's fantastic. I've enjoyed this show and the exciting contact with telepathy. You know, Dunninger's great gift reminds me of an old Greek quotation. Wonders are many. None more wonderful than man.
Thank you, Irene Rich. Mr. Revson, what have you to say?
Well, what can a man say after that? I don't know. But seeing's believing. The people get the right answers. That's all that matters.
Thank you, Mr. Revson, Miss Cagney, and Miss Rich, for your judgment and your excellent cooperation. It was a treat working with you. There is an impression, and one that I do want to get before I conclude my program tonight, with the Lady Aldjuffman concentrating his or her mind upon the digits 281, 451. Please raise his or her hand. It comes from little lady, the 16th row or 17th, the left side of the studio. You've thought of that all through my program without letting go of it. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Good night.
Dunninger, the Master Mentalist, was rebroadcast for the American Armed Forces and their allies. And now, the storyteller. Listen as the tale unfolds. And here's tonight's story, an 80-cent audience.
Step in, folks. Step right in and see the amazing, incredible, unbelievable, only one of his kind, Jim, half horse and half man. only 10 cents, ladies and gentlemen, to gaze upon a thrilling, chilling sight you'll never forget.
The young man who owned a half interest in the freak of nature advertised as half horse, half man was disgusted with the cheapness of the sideshow. If ever he was going to crash the big time, he had to do it now. That night, he sold his half interest for $100 and boarded a train for New York and the Great White Way. When he landed in New York, he took a $5 room on Lexington Avenue. For weeks, he made the rounds of the booking agents. The story was always the same. His act was more suited to the parlor than the stage. Though neither the young man's courage nor faith in himself was gone, his $100 soon was. And then when he was nearly desperate, he received a call from a booking agent to show his act. He was told to be at the New York Roof at 10 o'clock on a Monday morning. It was his big opportunity. But the young man knew that his act depended on the presence of a receptive audience. The young man remained in serious thought long after he hung up the receiver. Then a slow smile spread over his face. He dug into his pockets and pulled out 80 cents, all the money he had in the world. That would just cover it, he thought, and grabbing his hat, he ran out to the nearest newspaper office. The next morning, when the booking agent arrived at the appointed audition place, he was amazed to discover not one man waiting for him, but hundreds, all of them wildly applauding and cheering the antics of a performer on the raised platform. The agent stood by and watched for several minutes, tremendously impressed by the audience reaction. Then he walked straight to the platform and before the entire assemblage, signed the performer to a long-term contract with Tony Pastor's Theater. The young man accepted the contract with a smile. His trick had worked. With his last remaining 80 cents, he had inserted an advertisement in the Help Wanted column of a Sunday paper calling for 1,000 men for 1 hour at $1 each. Once the mob had congregated, he rose and said, "The man who does the hiring sent me ahead to amuse you until he gets here." Well, not accustomed to being entertained while job hunting, the men lustily expressed their appreciation and created the effect he had hoped for. The young man who hired his own audience on 80 cents and subsequently established himself as one of the most successful sleight-of-hand artists in the world was Thurston the Magician.
This is the Armed Forces Radio Service.